Hi, I'm Steph.
And I'm Jules.
And welcome to The Babesmen.
Steph is a body positive photographer.
And Jules is an intuitive eating and body image coach.
And we're passionate about empowering people to own their bodies and themselves so that they can live their biggest, boldest lives.
So join us as we celebrate the stories of incredible humans and the bodies they've lived them in. We just...
Steph looks at me and I know that she's wanting me to go, hey, Steph.
Hey, hey Jules.
And I was just like,
no,
I don't want to.
Because we don't do it anymore.
We don't do it anymore. And I was like, I just stared back.
I say it every week, but we are getting better and better at podcasting.
Listen, we are. It's fine. It's good. Did you notice? So, as you all know, Maple, my dog.
Julie's crying.
That's what happens when I laugh hard.
That's so hard.
That's just normal for me. So Maple, my dog, wants to be down here as we record.
Right.
And I thought it was very nice of her.
Thoughtful.
Considerate. Courteous and considerate. Yes.
Ah.
Yes. It was very considerate of her. She wanted to go upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
So she makes her way up onto the stairs and she's looking at us for a while like, are you going to let me out?
You're going to get up and let me out?
You're going to
like
open the door for me?
Nah, girl.
And we're like, nah, girl, we can't. And so she goes up to the door and she gives a very, very, very soft woof.
Like the smallest.
The softest woof. You won't hear it in the recording. That's
no.
How that's how soft. It was the softest little woof. Like, hey, Dad,
will you come
let me out? I don't want to bug Steph and Jules. They're podcasting.
She understands her responsibility.
She does.
And like she looked at us and I could tell it was the look in her eye like, I'm not going to bark at you because I know you're busy, but I'm also letting you know that I would really like to go upstairs right now.
Yeah.
And then she took it upon herself to seek outside help in the form of Alex upstairs.
She did. Which that worked.
What a professional.
What a professional.
What a fucking professional.
Maple, the burner bear strikes again.
Wow. The backbone of this organization.
Class act to that Maple Bee. Class act. Many people, they're like, wait. Like, so on our Christmas card, we'll include Maple.
Obviously.
And I'll put Maple Bee. Because that's really her name now. Her name is Maple Bee.
Yeah, I just call her Bee.
Bee. What up, Bee? Right. It's a part of her name. And
or
some
Mapes.
People won't realize. And they'll be like, wait. Shouldn't be Maple O, like Olamacher?
It's like, no. It's-
I'm like, y'all, no. Her name is Maple Bear. Maple Bee.
Maple the Burner Bear.
Maple the Burner Bear, Maple Bear, Maple B.
MTBB.
Anyways, this is not the Maple Bear podcast.
She thinks it is.
She thinks it is.
Welcome to the Babesmen.
Welcome, guys. Good to have you for another episode of the Babesmen podcast.
Heyo. Who do we have this week?
A great guest. We have Morgan Fazio. Morgan's an anti-diet and body image coach. She also does personal training. And she really helps her clients make peace with food and exercise, heal digestion, and balance hormones. She is wonderful. She has a really powerful story about experiencing a lot of physical pain in her body, ended up being diagnosed with things like endometriosis and PCOS and SIBO. And I'm forgetting the fourth thing, but you'll hear all about it in our episode. And a really powerful story about learning how to trust herself and advocate for herself at the doctor's office and how she healed from the pain of these things. It's a great conversation. We just loved it. Morgan's awesome. Morgan was in my anti-diet health coach camp and I realized talking to her. So many of you know that in 2019, I spoke at Health Coach Institute Live's big live event or Health Coach Institute's live event. There we go. And part of that, you know, like I'm in the audience and we were doing like coaching things like that weekend. It's a whole like weekend long thing.
Yeah.
And I realized talking to Morgan just now, I'm like, oh my God, Morgan, you were at that, weren't you? She's like, yes. I'm like, and you were sitting behind me during one of the like little breakout, you know, coach your neighbor, say hi or whatever thing. She's like,
right.
Yes. I'm like, oh, and I met you then. She's like, yes. And it just all hit me all at once. I'm like, oh my God, like not only do I know you because you were in anti-diet health coach camp, but like we met in person.
I fucking love
that event.
And she also gave you what I think is one of the greatest compliments, which is that I saw this person was like, I need to know them. And I always find that to be the greatest compliment.
I can't. It's so nice.
And one I would it's give so you, nice. Obviously.
Oh, thank you, Brad.
Yeah, this conversation is fan-freaking-tastic. I think you really covered all the bases, Morgan's story is phenomenal. She is such an incredible human, and we are so excited to share her with you this week.
So excited.
So let's dive right in.
My friends, I have a very exciting announcement. You may have heard by now, but maybe you haven't heard by now that Wednesday, June 23rd is Diet Culture Ditch Day.
Ooh.
I want you to summon up all that rebellious energy of your teenage days when like
or
senior
me
ditch
right
day
now.
Or like Steph right and join us for Diet Culture Ditch Day.
Yeah.
It's going to be so fun. I made it up. I just made it up. I was like,
I want
Diet Culture Ditch Day. Because, you know, summertime is always when diet culture roars extra loud. And especially this year, they're trying to capitalize on all of our COVID shit. And I'm just like, no. I want to give people as much support as possible. And so Diet Culture Ditch Day is going to be it. And it's really all happening online. So you can join us. I have a fun bingo game that we're going to be doing on social media on Wednesday. We're going to have an Instagram live chat with Steph.
That's me.
I'm doing my free masterclass on Wednesday night. Hour long, learn diet culture's three biggest rules that are holding you back and how to overcome them. This is a great day, especially if you've ever wanted to share this information, this knowledge, this space with other people in your lives. I'm going to make that so easy for you with fun things to share on Instagram, through the bingo. You can invite them. There's a prize for whoever. Like, yeah.
Everyone I love prizes.
Everyone who gets a bingo is entered to win a pretty badass grand prize. So anyways, June 23rd. We'll have the link to all the details and schedule in our show notes. It's going to be super fun. So spread the word.
Hell yes.
Hi, Morgan. Welcome to the basement.
Thanks so much for having me on. I'm super excited.
Oh, yay. So I know Morgan because she is a fellow Health Coach Institute graduate, and she did our anti-diet health coach camp. And oh, so I got to spend like the last like 6 months like intimately with Morgan, and she's an amazing person. So I'm super pumped to be able to bring you onto the pod.
Thanks so much. Yeah, it was the anti-diet health coach camp was pure gold. Loved it and super sad it's over. But now I'm happy to be here talking to you more.
Yes, yay. I know. You can't get rid of me.
I know.
So tell our listeners a little bit about you. Where are you from? What do you do? All that good stuff.
So I live currently a little bit outside of Boston, Massachusetts. I took forever to convince me to move here. My husband's initially from Southborough, Massachusetts. And I was like, I don't ever want to move out there. And then here we are and I love it. And I can't imagine living anywhere else. But I worked in corporate America for about 10 years. I have a Bachelor of Science in Engineering and Management, got a Master's in Business, and then found that life wasn't really for me. It was something that I felt like I should be doing. The more I like think back on it, it was like the career path I thought I should be following and doing all the right things and living life like the right way. And then I realized like probably over the last like 5-6 years that, you know, hey, I'm actually not really into this route. And I'd rather be putting my energy towards things that really light me up and make me feel good. And here we are. I'm now full-time health coaching, got a certification in personal training, and now I run my own business and do this all from home and absolutely love it and really into the intuitive eating and body image work.
Love that.
We love it. We love it. Also, like that engineering background.
I mean, hot damn.
Hot damn.
Hot damn. Hot she's
damn.
Smart.
Hot damn. Hot damn. My brother is an engineer, so I know like how crazy like getting your undergrad in engineering is like that's oof, wild.
Oh, I was home and I looked through some like old college notebooks and it was just like scribbles and all these like weird icons. I'm like, what is this? Like I knew this at one point.
That's how I feel about long division. Now. I feel that way about long division. I'm like, I knew this at one point, couldn't do it now.
One of my like best friends, her boyfriend is a high school history and math teacher. And he'll post like on his Instagram stories every week, like Mr. O's question of the week, and like a math problem. And it's so frustrating because I'm like, damn it. Like in a high school, I would have rocked that. And right? Now I'm like, Like, how do you even do it? And I'm like, damn.
I'm like, I know every word to every Taylor Swift song that exists, and I can't do fucking math.
It's the important things in life, Steph. Like, that's important.
But you can add up the numbers of a date to see if it equals 13.
I sure can.
To see if it's her special
number. To see
number.
If it's a day that she might release a new album.
That's the only math that Steph cares about.
I'm fortunate that my sister-in-law teaches math. So if I ever have kids and I can't do a math problem, oh, they're perfect. In like fourth grade, I'll be like, hey, you know what would be great is if you asked
your
kids.
Right?
What's really bad is I come from a long line of math teachers. My grandmother was a math teacher. She actually tutored LeBron James.
And no brag.
I know. Sir Marianne, bless up. And then like her two daughters, MJ and my Aunt Jane, both math teachers. Like I should, anyways, I am really letting down my lineage here.
You know, our brains just have other things to focus on. And as it turns out, I do have a calculator with me everywhere I go.
It's in my phone.
Because my phone is a tiny computer. And so my brain just let that go. Those are the brain cells I've lost.
You know?
And that's okay.
Hopefully it's one day we'll lose diet culture brain cells as much as we've lost our grade school math brain cells. That'd be great.
Let's just, you know, keep hoping. Keep the dream alive.
Keep the dream alive.
Keep smoking weed. In college, for the best.
I wasn't allowed to use calculators. And as soon as I left, I was like, give me that shit. Like, I'm using this all the time.
Yeah.
Like, this is so silly. I have a phone. Why would I not use it?
Right. You're like, my own brain is, can make mistakes, but a calculator won't. So I'm
100%. And why would I think harder than I have to?
Yeah. Right. Why do things that I don't
have to do? Let's be efficient here. Anyway, this is not the math podcast.
This is super not a math podcast. Oh my God. I would quit.
So let's launch in with our first question, shall we?
Let's show. So Morgan, we always like to start with the same question for our guests here on the Babes Mint. Can you tell us a bit about what your relationship with your body was like when you were young?
Well, I remember always growing up in like a relatively thin body. It was like considered like a stick in high school. People would call me that. And it was, I was in like a ton of sports, and I feel like I connected to my body and growing up in a way that was like very functional. Mm-hmm. So I was more like using it for sports and activities and getting places. And it actually wasn't until probably like late high school or early college when I really started to see my body differently and it shift. I especially remember like at the end of high school when I wasn't really getting boobs. I was just staying flat. And I remember somebody pointed at a wall and went, "Hey, look, it's Morgan." And I was so self-conscious from that point. I also had like really big teeth, and my body's always been like super slow to develop. So I remember in high school, like not having these like two large teeth. I don't know what these are called. So I'm not a dentist podcast either, but whatever these are.
Are they canines?
Canines, incisors.
That's the only, I was actually just at the dentist.
My friend is in dental school. She did let me drill fake teeth one time when I was drunk.
Ew.
They're
fake. Ew. I don't know.
They're not real.
I don't care. Just that drill.
It was awesome.
Moving on.
But I don't know what any teeth are, but I do know how to do a crown prep. I know how to do a crown prep. And I could be a dentist if you let me. If you let me, I know how.
I hate dental shit.
You'll love it. I got gold chains put in my teeth.
Yes.
Like they had to go all the way up here, like into my gums, put a brace and a gold chain on it. And then I go to the dentist and they'd pull it.
I had a friend who had those in middle school.
Oh, Jesus.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
But so relating back to my body, I always felt like I wasn't where I needed to be. My body was just like, I wished it would be further along, and people would make fun of me because like, hey, you don't look like everybody else. Or like, you don't look like you're supposed to look. And I just kind of started feeling this wrongness in my body, or like something wasn't right with how I was developing. And then I remember in college, I grew up in a family. My mother was a health and phys ed teacher. So like super hyper focused on like food, nutrition, exercise. My dad was the engineer of the family. So I did always feel like these two tug of wars of like, I like both of those things and which one to go to. Mm-hmm. But anyways, like my parents would always say like, oh, you have to be really careful of like the freshman 15, like go to college and like make sure you're moving, like doing all these things. So I went to college and I wasn't ever really used to having to monitor that stuff. So I didn't. And I just like kept living my life. And then I gained weight. And that was the first time I really had to deal with coming home from college and having people comment on my weight. That mm-hmm. was never a thing for me before. And it made me feel super uncomfortable and like almost under a microscope. Like yeah. my body was this thing that everybody was looking at and I failed. Like I went to college and I just didn't do it right. And I mm-hmm. messed up. And I remember that really was the first time I started looking into diets and starting to figure out like, okay, like how do I get this back in control? Like, how do I get back to the size that wasn't a problem? Yeah. And mm-hmm. like, I remember growing up and I did have it really easy through high school. Like I didn't have really any comments about weight or my body size because it was the acceptable body size in the culture that we lived in. But you know, in my work, I find that there's usually two reasons why women turn to diets. And one is to look a certain way, to like change or manipulate or fix themselves to like fit this image that we're supposed to be. And number two is just to feel better. And they just don't know any other way to do that because we're taught in the society so much that if you don't feel good, then you must be eating something wrong and you have to fix that and like really be mindful about what you're eating to feel better. So that the first part of my story was really focused in that category number one, where I just really wanted to look different. I wanted to look acceptable and I wanted to belong and I wanted to not have my body be a big deal. And then later on is when I got into category two, but I actually at some point like through college, and I really don't even know what sparked it, but I remember thinking like, what am I working so hard to be accepted by? Like I'm working so hard to change myself for acceptance and belonging, but acceptance into what? Like just like yeah. to be accepted for how I look and what my body is like, but then what happens if that changes? And then like those people are going to go away. And it was this, the first time I really started like having that thought peep in. And I didn't really like until probably a couple of years ago or a year ago, really like grasp it and start doing the deep work to let go of all of the diet stuff.
Yeah.
That's honestly amazing that you had that inkling come into you when you were in college, having that thought of, wait, I'm doing all this work to be accepted. I'm trying to change and manipulate my body to be accepted. But then accepted by who and whose standards am I trying to conform to? And if I'm trying to change myself to be accepted, is that actually even acceptance?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it reminds me of, you know, Brené Brown,
friend of the pod.
Oh, my favorite. I love her so much.
Oh, don't we all? She talks about the difference between like fitting in and belonging. Mm-hmm. And that's what this is bringing up for me, you know, is we most of us, I know I did, and I think we all did here. Like we worked at one point in our lives so hard as to fit in, right? Yeah. To change ourselves, to fit in, to fit the mold of society. Right, right. To be accepted, quote, by our peers and whatnot. When actually what we really long for is that true belonging. Mm-hmm. And that is meaning we're accepted for who we are, that we don't have to change anything about ourselves to belong. We belong because people love us for who we are as humans, not the person we're trying to be, the mold we're trying to fit. You know, it's like, it's that whole notion of, do we want to live our lives being loved for who we're not, mm-hmm. right? Or hated for who we truly are. Yeah. Or loved for who we truly are, or right? Vice versa. You know what I mean? It's like, ooh.
Well, and being who you really are takes boldness.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when we're taught from such an early age, like you were saying, Morgan, to find the feelings that we're seeking, the feeling of belonging. We are taught that all those feelings are on the other side of a diet. Like,
yeah. Yes.
If we feel bad in any way, like depression, physically feeling bad, like mentally feeling bad, all of these things can be solved by being in a smaller body, right?
Yep.
Like, mm-hmm. yeah. What the actual fuck?
I mean, that's exactly what diet culture has worked so hard to teach us.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, feeling feeling depressed, feeling down, feeling whatever. Oh, a diet and losing weight is your solution.
Smaller jeans are going to solve all of your problems.
Yeah. So, so it's no wonder.
Everything revolves around the body.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's no wonder that we feel that way and we think these things and that we turn to dieting and body control whenever something in our life goes awry. Like, no wonder, because it's been a lifetime worth of programming.
Yeah.
Of diet culture saying, feeling this way, you need a diet. That'll solve mm-hmm. all your problems, right? And it's just...
And it's actually this outer this outer layer of... because. In actuality, for most of us, our body image issues, disordered eating, all these things are really just symptoms of another problem, like having trauma, having other things that like these deep-seated beliefs mm-hmm. about ourselves that we believe we can solve through dieting because we've been sold this lie that diets will solve these problems when in actuality, it's like, no, this is deeper work.
Yeah.
This is much deeper work.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And I think Julie has the program that says it best, like coming home to yourself. And we talk about belonging and something that, again, took me a really long time to realize, but it's this process of belonging to yourself. Like, yeah. how do I want to feel? And like, yeah. how do yeah. I like want to relate to myself? And how do I like foster that relationship almost like a friend? That was actually really helpful when I shifted into that category two I talked about, where I started to feel awful, like back in like 2019, and my body was just feeling terrible all the time. And this is why I started getting into the work with intuitive eating with women who don't feel good in their bodies, not necessarily that they want to like change or fix or manipulate their appearance, but they just want to feel better and they don't know any other way how, because I know how like mentally taxing that can be. And especially if you've been stuck in diet culture for so long, your first couple thoughts tend to be that I hate my body. Like, why can't it just do what I want it to do? And this is so frustrating. And two, to like hyper focus on food to the point where like, I'd say even more so than like the first time I started dieting, I was obsessed about everything I was putting in my body. To the point where I was like having it on an app, having it in a diary, sending emails to doctors about everything I was eating, trying to like track it back for months and figure out where the heck I could find like if there was a deviation and something that made me feel bad. And then the more I started talking to other women, this was very common. When your body started to have, you know, like actual issues, like I was having a lot of digestive issues, hormone issues, people start to laser focus on this food area and really having like a hard time appreciating their body. And just then it starts feeling like your body's more wrong and just not normal. And I guess going back to what I first said, like relating to your body like a friend. And that was the first mindset shift that really helped me heal, was saying, okay, I wouldn't treat a friend like this if they came to me saying they were struggling with feeling terrible or like not feeling good. I wouldn't say like, oh, you need to be eating this way or eating better. I would ask like, what can I do to support you? Like, how can I help you? What do you need? And that's not food most of the time. Sometimes it can be rest, or it could be that we need to slow down, or, you know, honestly, anything. It can be a ton of things outside of food, but we always tend to start with food and like beat ourselves up over not eating a certain way. Mm. Does that make sense?
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's so funny because a lot of issues are stress related. You know, mm-hmm. not everyone is, but a lot of issues are stress related. And what does a hyper focus on food and food rules do? It gives us more stress.
Mm-hmm. Right. I was actually working with a client, and we were working on finding like the foods that were upsetting her system, and we were experimenting with popcorn. And I told her to experiment a couple of times that week, just kind of notice what was going on. And then we'll talk about it the following week. And she came back the following week and said, you know, it's so weird. Like, I still can't figure it out. I don't understand. I said, okay, well, walk me through what happened. So she said, well, the first time I ate it and I had a ton of issues. And then the second time I ate, I had no issues and I felt completely fine. So I said, well, walk me through like the experience. Like, what was that like for you the first time? What were you doing? What were you saying? Who were you with? And she was by herself. She said she was thinking about how this was going to make her feel and almost like hyper-focusing on the result and like seeing, okay, oh, this is scary. This is probably going to make me feel bad. I'm nervous about this making me feel bad. And then she sat by herself afterwards, almost like hyper-focusing on the body now. And then that caused more stress. Mm. And then she felt terrible. The second time she was with friends, very relaxed, actually ate more popcorn than she did the first time, felt completely fine. And this really shows like this, there is a gut like brain connection with, you can stress yourself out if you're hyper-focusing on food and your body's reaction to food and make your body actually sick.
Yes.
Whereas if we just relax and kind of enjoy the eating experience, and let go of some of that stress, our body feels more safe and able to digest.
Yes. Yeah. Morgan, have you read Anti-Diet by Christy Harrison?
I have the book. I have not started reading it yet.
So there's this one part in it where she's talking about gluten intolerance. And of course, like being celiac is obviously a very real thing where really hurts your body. But she was talking about a lot of this research that's been done on gluten intolerance and how they found a nocebo effect, it's called, where people think that gluten makes them feel badly. And it is their thoughts and beliefs that actually causes, and then they have very real symptoms. So it's not saying that they don't have real symptoms. Mm-hmm. They mm-hmm. have real symptoms, but it's not actually the gluten causing the symptoms. It's their beliefs that the gluten is causing the symptoms that cause the symptoms.
Yeah.
Actually, it's like a very, like for a true, and yes, gluten intolerances exist, but it's like very, very, very rare actually mm-hmm. to have a gluten intolerance.
So common that people believe they have
exactly,
that.
Exactly. And I thought that was so fascinating. And it really goes to show what you're saying. It's this idea of like the stress and our beliefs of this is going to make me feel horrible can sometimes be what's making us feel horrible, not actually the food.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like mind blowing.
Absolutely. I mean, I think so many of my digestive issues, which I've had forever. I mean, they've said I've had IBS since I was what, like 11? Oddly enough, around the same time that my eating disorder really kicked into high gear.
Oh, what do you know?
Super weird how those things coincide. But I'm like, it's all so stress related. Mm-hmm. I know like mm-hmm. My stomach kicks up into that fired up state when I'm under a lot of stress or when I'm hyper focusing on what I'm eating and all of these things. And it's, we don't fully realize just how connected these two like operating systems inside of our bodies are.
Yeah.
And just like you said, like when you got diagnosed with IBS, like that was kind of the start of the eating disorder. Cause we are taught even by doctors, like you get diagnosed and you're given a meal plan for how to treat IBS. You're like, wait a minute, like, what if it's not food? What if it has nothing to do with the food and actually like everything to do with all these other factors? But our society, I think, has become so laser focused again on the food piece and making you feel like, oh, because you got this diagnosis, you're eating wrong. And there's a wrong way to eat and a right way to eat. And like, you've been doing it the wrong way. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And it reminds me of this conversation with a dietitian, I think it was Emily Bonzebeck. And she was saying, you know, that they're taught in dietetic school and in medicine in general, like start the least invasive thing, you know, and, mm-hmm. and people think, oh, food is the least invasive. But it actually is not, because we're eating every day, multiple times a day. And so if all of a sudden we're told we can't eat certain things, we shouldn't eat certain things, that's very invasive. That
super
impacts
invasive.
Every single meal, every single snack. And we can get mm-hmm. really stressed and really rigid. And then we can even spiral into disordered eating and eating disorders. Like it's not like changing our food is not invasive. It is, right? And hey, might food cause issues? Sure, it might. Mm-hmm. But it's not always. And I think a lot of times it's other things at play. So I'm curious for you. So you were saying that you started having a lot of issues and you were feeling just really unwell. And you're like, I don't feel physically well in my body. And you were given all these types of like, don't eat this and don't eat that. And it didn't help.
Yeah. So basically, like long story short, came off birth control in, I think it was early 2019. And I was really excited. It's like, oh, I'm going to connect to my body. I'm going to feel my natural self. I'm going to be off these hormones that I was on for like 10 plus years. And I felt awful. I was like totally different than what I was expecting. And I, like I said, had tons of digestive issues, tons of issues with my period. And I was getting so bloated to the point where like I couldn't find pants to fit. And I would wake up in the morning and I felt like my stomach would be like what's normal for me. And then it would just blow up like a huge balloon by the end of the day. And I understand like bloating. I think it's normal to bloat as a human, but this was just super uncomfortable and painful and just so much more extreme than what I'd ever experienced. Mm-hmm. And so I got diagnosed, long story short, over a year and a half with endometriosis, PCOS, SIBO, and leaky gut. I found that endometriosis was a huge part of it. So surgery helped. I think if I had, which I had started with food, it didn't really help because I wasn't addressing what was actually wrong, which was endometriosis, which ends up like spiraling into all of these other issues because it was basically like restricting my organs. And then I had all these other things start to happen. So I always encourage women to like get to the root of your issue first before you even start with food. Because after I healed the endo piece, and then I shifted my focus more to food, but in a different way. It wasn't like restrictive and controlling. It was more like from a nourishing lens of and getting curious with my body and like, hey, what can I add in to help you? Like, how can I feel the best and start experimenting with food in a fun way rather than a restrictive way of like, oh, I can't eat this and I can't eat this, which is a very subtle shift, but powerful shift. So going back to like getting diagnosed with the right thing, I found was actually really hard for the body I was in. It actually made me spend more time and more money because I had countless doctors tell me, oh, you're in a normal weight, so nothing's wrong, or it's in your head, or maybe it's stress. Yeah. And it was so frustrating. And I spent so much money and so much time because PCOS, like they usually see women, they said, oh, usually like you're overweight and you're not overweight, so you don't have PCOS. You can't have PCOS or you can't have endo. I was actually told by one doctor, if you have endometriosis, it's probably not that bad. Now, meanwhile, I had stage 4, which was the worst kind of endo.
Oh my
so
God.
It also, it goes, oh it made God. Me so mad that our system is so focused on mm-hmm. body size mm-hmm. and that is so linked to health, which is not. Like, as we know, right. your body size right. has very little, if anything, to do at all with your health.
Right.
So getting a doctor that listened to me and not just looked at me was important. And I always encourage clients to start there.
And Morgan, I'm not an expert in this and you're probably going to know a lot more about this than I do, but isn't it true that in many, but not all instances, weight gain can be a symptom of, for instance, PCOS? Like,
yes,
it's not the weight gain that caused, it's not like, oh, you're quote, I hate using the word overweight, that causes PCOS. No, it's that like, weight gain can be a symptom of PCOS.
Correct.
For some, not all, like it wasn't in your case, right? But for some people, this, I think it's really important to pause here because we've talked about how weight stigma can hurt. It hurts all of us mm-hmm. to varying degrees. It does. And it shows up in the doctor's office in varying degrees. And we've talked about it a lot in terms of people who do live in large bodies that are, you know, go to the doctor and they're just prescribed weight loss and they're not actually seen as patients and how people will often delay care and will not go to an annual well check because of the judgment and stigma and how awful that can be. What we haven't talked about is this other end of the spectrum. A doctor seeing you and you're still experiencing weight stigma, but in a very different way. They're saying, oh, well, you're in a small body. You're, quote, in the quote unquote normal weight category in the BMI. So you can't have any of these issues when you actually did. So it just shows us how weight bias and weight stigma drastically impact people in all body shapes and sizes to different degrees, and how it just can really put blinders on our doctors.
And it's dangerous.
It is.
I mean, the reality is that it's dangerous for everyone to be denied the care that they need when you are living with something. I mean, I, again, don't know that much about endo or PCOS, but I know it can be extremely painful. And those surgeries are life changers, life savers mm-hmm. for people who exist with those conditions. And so, and I know from my own experience, like I needed my gallbladder removed years ago and I was not taken seriously because I was in a larger body. They kept telling me to lose weight. And I finally went to a surgeon that my mom just knew from something else and left. I had been sent for test after test after test. And I finally went to the surgeon who took it out and was like, if we hadn't taken this out now, it was going to rupture within the next 2 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
So I could have gotten sepsis.
Holy
I could have
shit.
Had horrible infections. Like you can die from that. It's very serious. And I had these doctors who just kept pushing me off and pushing me off because I lived in a larger body. And there's so much danger in having medical professionals who do not take you seriously because of the way that you look on both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boom. Yes. Yeah. That's 100%. And it's you said it best, it's dangerous. We mm-hmm. need to start actually listening to people's symptoms rather than just looking on the outside and saying, oh, like, I think I know everything about your health based on like my, how you look, which has nothing to do with how we actually feel and how our body is actually functioning yeah, internally. Yeah.
Right, right. And it's also, I hear so many people say, and clients, for instance, and people just fearing like, oh, I'm afraid that because I'm in a larger body, if I try and do things like get pregnant or whatever, that I'm going to have complications or that this is going to happen. And I get where they're coming from because that's been the narrative that we've all been fed. But I know plenty of people who are in small bodies who have also had complications or also have mm-hmm. health issues. It's like, mm-hmm. but why do we think that like, but well, why do we? It's because diet culture, obviously. But it just goes to show us that we somehow are living in this world where we think, oh, if we're thin, we're never going to have health issues. It's like, well, that's not true. Like, that's just straight up not true. And even yeah. things like knee replacements, for instance, people can think, oh, it's like, that's, you know, you get a knee replacement, you know, oh, it's because like you've had too much weight on your body or whatever. No, like the people that I know with knee replacements are people who like are in small bodies. Like, and it's just, that just happens, whether it's like, you know, a chronic, you know, injury that results in you needing a knee replacement or just like arthritis or whatever. It doesn't matter your body size. Like, but so many of us, we place this blame. Mm-hmm. And I've had actually a lot of clients voice that there's this real stress over self-blame. Mm-hmm. And that I don't know if this exists. It probably does. But I know, for instance, like people, like my clients in larger bodies, they have had to deal with a lot of this in terms of like overcoming, blaming themselves for having different health issues. It's mm-hmm. like, oh my God, it's so harmful and damaging that we are making people blame themselves for having a health problem.
Yeah.
Just because they're in a larger body. We all, like everyone has health problems and we shouldn't be blaming ourselves for them, you know,
And it really boils down to, again, this idea that has been so deeply ingrained in us by diet culture that thinness equals health.
Right.
That you Amen. Cannot be healthy in a larger body. It mm-hmm. is an implicit bias that people have when they view a person in a larger body and also when they view people in smaller bodies, because health is a spectrum that exists for every body size. It's different for every single body, like what feels healthy versus what does not feel healthy. And you cannot see health. And it's something that has been really liberating for me with doctors. I used to have so much shame and so much stress around going to the doctor until I realized that, like, obviously, medical professionals are very intelligent. They do a lot of school, whatever. But at the same time, they play a lot of guessing games. They mm-hmm. they go based on what they've seen in the past and they go based on what they've learned from books, but they cannot look at the outside of my body and tell me exactly what's going on with the inside of it. I know better how I feel than they do. And so if yes. I can't be connected to my own body and understand how she feels from the inside and express that to my doctor is going to play guessing games based on what they have seen in the past mm-hmm. and what they've been taught. And they have also been influenced by diet culture.
Oh, all their schooling has
all
been
their
under
schooling
the
has
diet
been
culture.
Wildly influenced yeah. by diet culture. And right. so unless we start arming everybody with the understanding that thinness does not equate to health and fatness does not equate to unhealthy behavior. Like it's just not the same. And we all have to believe that like we actually know ourselves the best. Mm. So if we are in pain, yes. we are allowed to seek help for that. Mm-hmm. And we deserve to be taken seriously, mm-hmm. regardless of what we look like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Steph, I always say like I could go to a doctor with 30 medical degrees and still know more about my body than he does. And that's mm-hmm. not discounting medicine or science or anything. It's just basically saying like, no, I'm the authority on my body and I'm the only person that can really say how I feel.
Yeah.
And if that's not being listened to or taken seriously, then I'm wasting my time with this doctor. And I remember getting the bullshit IBS diagnosis too, since probably a really early age. And I finally, like over this, like the 2019 period, I had colonoscopies and ultrasounds and all mm-hmm. the things. And this doctor basically said, all right, well, you just have IBS and we have to put you on a laxative for the rest of your life. And I was like, this is not how I want to live my life. And just decided to go to something different. And I remember a friend said, you just need to listen to doctors more. Like they are the doctor, they are the expert. Like you just need to listen to them. I'm like, well, it's not that I'm not listening to them. I am listening. I just don't agree. And I'm the authority on my body and I'm going to choose something different. And thank God I did, because if I had just sat in that, like, I'm going to listen to the doctor, I wouldn't be here. Yeah. I don't think I'd be feeling nearly as good as I am. And I'm, for the record, not on laxatives or anything for that matter, yeah, and I've been able to heal myself.
Yeah. Well, I went through gut issues too, and I had endoscopy and colonoscopy, and they're like, oh, well, we can't find anything. And the doctor goes, you know, like might be IBS, you might be lactose intolerant. Never once in my quest to figure out what was wrong with my like digestive issues did someone ask me, have you ever struggled with an eating disorder? Because mm-hmm. like, hello, of course that would play a massive role. I was binging and purging.
Yeah.
Of course that's going to impact my digestive system. And for me, and this is not the case for everybody, but for me, my birth control, when I went off birth control 2 years ago, it was incredible how in 3 months, like things had gotten much better. But like in 3 months time afterwards, it was like, boom, my bowels were like, hi, this is great. Like, I feel great. So it's like, never once were people asking those questions like, oh, it's not necessarily, like, it could not be birth control, but it could be.
Yeah.
That could be a thing to play with. Or do you have any history with disorder? Like, that was never a conversation. And instead, this doctor planted into my head, oh, you might be lactose intolerant. And so then I took that as I am lactose intolerant. Mm-hmm. And then eliminated dairy for a couple of years. It was taking like the lactate, whatever, like pills.
Yeah, you can tell I've been somewhere because I leave them everywhere.
Yes. And so I was doing that. And then things got even worse.
Because you had enough lactase enzymes.
And like, yes. And I, to this day, like I keep 2% milk in my fridge. I love drinking milk. My body actually needs dairy to feel well. And I'm just like, oh my God.
Well, and a lot of it, what's coming up for me right now is thinking about the fact that we are taught to believe doctors. And especially mm-hmm. as women, I think it comes back to this idea of being good girls and being mm-hmm. acceptable mm-hmm. and following the rules means that mm-hmm. we listen to authority figures, and doctors mm-hmm. are authority figures. And in actuality, again, it's dangerous for people to just believe a person that we view as higher up on the food chain than us because they know more, quote unquote. But, you know, especially in medicine, we know our bodies the best. And we also know that all of the biases that the three of us in this conversation have lived, I mean, Black women experience so much of this within medicine, and it is so dangerous.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it, like, it's just so important to acknowledge that, like, the struggles of not being believed about your pain and your wellness based on what you look like is devastating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 100%. It really is.
Yeah.
So then tell us more about your like healing journey. So all of the, and I think it's really cool that you, because you were ultimately being gaslit.
Yeah.
Right? You were like,
gaslit about your own
fucking
body.
This is how I'm feeling in my body. I'm feeling terrible. This is painful. I am having a balloon bloat, right? Balloon bloat. Balloon bloat. Like, this is painful. This is not normal. This is like, I need help. And having doctors be like, oh, you're thin, you're fine. Oh, but you must be fine. It's all in your head. What? Mm-hmm. So tell us like how you were able to advocate for yourself and what your actual healing journey was like.
What's sad, and it kind of touches on what Steph just said about being our own authority, is I didn't start pushing until other people believed something was wrong with me first. Like I thought it was, but I didn't trust my own authority at that point because I'd been so, I think, also stuck in diet culture, but also what Steph touched on with like the perfectionism and being the good girl and following the rules and listening to what other people were telling me. But my husband kept saying like, oh my God, like something seems wrong. Like this is not normal. And then I would ask, like, I'd show my parents, I'd be like, look what happens to me. I took like pictures, and my mom was genuinely concerned. And that was the first time, like, I really was feeling this like concern from other people. Mm. And I had felt it, but I had just been ignoring it because I'm like, well, I guess this is normal. Like, people get bloated. Like, I was like, women get bloated. That's what doctors are saying, or doctors are saying that it's in my head, or it's just stress, or I'm not eating right. And so shame on me. Like, I need to be more diligent about what I'm eating so I don't have this happen. But like, it was other people starting to tell me like, no, this is not normal. So I started really advocating for myself and finding the doctor that would listen. And I guess it wasn't really a linear thing or like all of these things going on at the same time. One of them was actually, Julie, your program, what you did with Holly. It was a 5-day like free challenge. I forget what you called it, but it was an intro to intuitive eating, which I had never heard before. And some of the stuff in there was like pure gold. And I had actually been doing... It seriously changed my life. I was doing the low FODMAP diet.
Oh yeah. I've heard of that.
Oh yes. Yeah, been there.
That's what everyone does for SIBO. And it's like super, super high success rates. They say, oh, everyone should be doing low FODMAP diet.
But you cut like everything out.
Yeah. Like crazy things.
Everything vegetables.
Out. Yeah.
Vegetables out. So I'm sitting there. I remember in my parents' kitchen, like holding this head of broccoli. And I was so sad because they were making it for dinner. And I looked at my mom and said, you know, I'm so sad. I can't eat this. But even it makes me feel so good, but I just can't have it. And then I heard myself say that. I was like, wait a minute. Like, it makes me feel good, but I'm not allowing myself to eat it. Like, isn't the point to feel good? Like, isn't my whole reason for doing this to feel good?
Yeah.
So then I started like trying to look at other ways to heal myself that had nothing to do with restricting myself or controlling my body, because I was honestly tired. I was so tired of 90% of my days being consumed by thoughts about food, thoughts about my body, being so hyper-focused on how my body felt. And honestly, the more I did work with letting go of some of the food stress and starting seeing food in a new light, and shifting from controlling to trusting my body, and shifting from restricting to nourishing, and like shifting from feeling at war with myself to actually respecting and loving myself. And loving myself took a long time, but that was actually part of the work too. I think body image can be a big source of stress for some women and also cause those issues to get worse.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So especially like in summer times, I know it's like the stress for me would amp up because you got to be beach body ready, you know, the diet culture term there, which like, ugh. Doesn't make sense, but it's just like all that stress, it's so bad for us. And when we can just learn how to connect to ourselves and form that relationship with ourselves, where we are just worthy no matter what we look like, and we can step into that version of ourselves, I felt so much better. And like, I just felt like this huge weight came off me and my body was able to breathe and be like, okay, I can now get to work on healing.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Yeah. That's an amazing story. Just from the beginning of it and you kind of believing the doctors being like, oh, this must be normal, you know, while all the while feeling terrible, then kind of having people in your life validate like, no, this is not normal. And then advocating for yourself. And then I love that broccoli story. Like yeah. You said it out loud, like, oh, I love that. It makes me feel good, but I can't have. Wait, what? what? And having that moment of stepping back. And right. And this just shows the amazing benefits of having a healthy relationship with food, with our bodies, with ourselves.
Yeah.
When we have that healthy relationship with all of those things, especially with ourselves and our bodies and food, the amount of stress that alleviates is so great. Mm-hmm. And the impact that that then has on our overall well-being is incredible. I mean,
I know something that you guys talk about a lot, which was a big part of this as well for me, was processing how I felt. Mm-hmm. And not just shoving it under the rug, because I think a very commonly accepted way of talking to people that are feeling down is saying, oh, just step out of it, or just be happy, or just like, I wish you weren't feeling this way. And I was known as like such the happy, upbeat, optimistic person, which I love to be. But now where I'm at, I don't put that pressure on myself to be that way constantly, because that no one feels 100% 100% of the time. And that fact alone changed a lot of stuff for me, because I realized like, wait, if I feel bad, or if I'm having a tough emotion to process, I have to let myself do that. And I can't just like over-optimistic my way out of this. And it's just going to come back later on. And I remember after endometriosis surgery, I actually had this exact thing happen where I was told everything I'd wanted to hear. Like my doctor was at my 2-week follow-up said, okay, I think I got all of it. We did excision, which means like they actually take out the roots, so it perhaps can't grow back. It's not guaranteed, but it's more likely that it won't. And you are as normal can be. Go live your life. And I cried, but it felt inside like I was sad. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea where that was coming from. And my husband was in the room, my family. I went home and told them this, and I was just crying and upset. And they're like, what's wrong with you? Like, you should be happy. Just be happy. This is exactly what you want to hear. And now granted, their intention was great. Like they just wanted me to be happy. Like they just wanted to remind me that this is everything I'd wanted to hear. But in that moment, I had to say, wait a minute, I need some time. So I had to put up a boundary to protect my energy and say, I'm going to go take 30 minutes. I'm going to go journal, which is one of the processing tools I use for my emotions. And in that process of journaling, I was able to basically walk myself through and process why I felt sad. And the reason I felt sad is because I had just gotten everything I wanted, and I immediately felt like it was going to be taken away from me for some reason, or like this was temporary.
Yeah.
And I was sad that there was a possibility I could lose it. And I was letting my mind run away to this like future state where I had lost it, rather than just being present with myself and being happy that like, this is what I can experience right now. So also the experience of like shifting into the presence really helped me a lot with healing, rather than running away with the anxiety of what's going to happen in the future. So process your feelings, people.
I was going to say, how powerful for you to take that time in the moment. I mean, that's something that I still fucking work on every day with all my big feelings.
Oh yeah.
But it's so true that how we react, how we respond to a big shift, especially something like that, I think that's very common. And we don't allow ourselves enough grace. When we do, we get exactly what we want, right? And it feels like we've been working so hard to get to that moment. And there is that fear that it can be taken away with you, taken away from you, especially something like, you know, your health or your wellness or whatever. And something, you know, like what you've been through that you don't have control over. You know, you can't diet your way out of those health issues. You just can't. And so I think allowing yourself to take the space to put up that boundary and be like, I'm just going to sit with this and let myself experience it and like honestly flow through it. Like journaling is such a great way to flow through a feeling like that. So that you can understand that like it's super fucking normal to be scared in that moment and to not be able to tap into the joy that I'm sure you felt eventually. And I mean, it is a very joyous thing to get get something resolved and move into that new phase. But like fucking let yourself feel your feelings. You got to feel what you feel when you feel it.
Yeah.
You got to feel what you feel when you feel it.
Put that on a sticker.
I know. That's what I always say. I'm like, I got to feel what I feel when I feel it.
Mm. Yeah. And that's going to go up and down. Right. So I think when I was younger, I also used to think there was this pinnacle or like this place to arrive at where you are just perfect and like have it all together. And it's just always going to be rain, like rainbows and sunshine.
That's not
the human experience. Right. Like that's not what makes life life. And I like, still I'm a human being and I have fears and I'm not going to just like make those stop. I will work through them differently. The more tools I have in my toolbox, and I'll let myself, you know, be with those feelings and not have this pressure to like basically get out of the tough ones. Like I think we're so brought up to think that we need to not be in those tough emotions and we need to hurry out and get back to the good ones. So there really are no good and bad. I'm saying it like how I think society interprets it, but like I just had this past week where I was, you know, kind of out of my element on vacation and doing lots of new things, lots of different changes to my routine. And I had like some reactions in my body and I had that fear come up for me, but now I'm just way, like it's faster for me to navigate those feelings than it was a year or two ago.
Yeah. It's so funny that we're so programmed to think that, oh, once I am X, you know, once I've gotten to Y, then I will just always be happy and life will be great and I'll have no challenges. And it's like, it's just like funny. It's like, really? We've all done it.
Is it like easy, breezy, beautiful life that we think?
Easy, breezy, beautiful cover girl.
That cover girl's going to get you. Cover girl is going to get you an easy, breezy, beautiful life. Are you kidding? That's just mascara.
It's like, oh, when I make more money. Oh, when I lose the weight. Oh, when I have this relationship. Oh, this. And it's like, not to say that those things, well, not the weight loss. We know that doesn't help. Yeah. But
but the other things.
But not to say that like other things like making more money, like sure that can like, you know, lead to some more ease in life or the job promotion or the relationship. But these things aren't an end all be all. And these things aren't ultimately what deliver happiness or deliver true joy or like we're humans going through human experience and life. And we're always going to have challenges. It's just a part of being a human. And like, what if we didn't see challenges as being a bad thing? You know, it's like, what if we saw challenges as like, okay, there are something for me here. Mm-hmm. I am needing this to grow. I am needing this to become that next version of me. And so it's not about never having challenges. It's about knowing how do we navigate challenges.
When I think I have like such a visual mind of like, I feel like we've been trained to believe that life is this like steady incline, right? Like it's just always headed up. It's a straight line, but it's like, it's a squiggle, right? It's a fucking mess. It's a doodle on a piece of paper where it's like, you might circle back to where you were before and you're going to go like zig to the right, zag to the left. And like, it's all over the place. And we are just here having a human experience. We're not here to climb a mountain because there isn't that peak. Like you were saying, Morgan, like it's not about reaching this plateau where everything is perfect because life is about living and experiencing what there is to feel and move through and all of these things. Like I think society's got it wrong.
And how many of us then miss out on life?
Yes.
Because we're always stuck in the trap. And this especially happens with diet culture. And it especially happens with the, you know, once I lose the weight, then I'll be happy thinking trap, you know? But how many of us miss out on life in the present because we're always thinking, well, when I do this, when I get here, then I'll be this. And I can tell you what, as a business owner, as a solopreneur, it's been an integral part of my own self-worth to disconnect my happiness from any monetary goal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and to be like, no.
And my output.
Right. Oh, yes.
Oh, God.
It's like my joy, my happiness, my peace, my freedom, my worth, my value. I have to detach it from anything outside of me, including how much money I make or my output or whatever, or my body or whatever it is, you know, and claim those things in the now. And it's really cool though, because the more you practice that, it just leads to just having this really wonderful life in the present. You know, so for instance, my baby pool is like a great example, but I'm serious, right? It's like,
it all comes back to the baby pool.
Like, do I dream of having my lakefront house in northwestern Michigan? Yeah, I do. Does my forever home dream have a pool in the backyard? You better fucking believe it does. But I'm not like, oh, I can't enjoy summer or I can't have my luxurious, fabulous summer until I get those things.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm just stuck in my little Clintonville home. No, I'm like, first of all, I love my little Clintonville home.
Yeah, you have a lovely home.
I love it. But it's like, no, I can make that same joy experience in the here and now. I just got to get creative. So what? I don't have a pool. So what? I don't have a lake. Okay, I can blow up a goddamn baby pool and have myself a time.
Yes, you can.
And
do I have the best time ever? You better believe I do.
Yes, you do.
I live it up. And people think it's hilarious until they experience it.
Listen, if you've never been to Julie's baby pool, it is a luxury experience. It cannot be beat. It is private. It is VIP. It is everything we are looking for in life. And I think that that's the trick, though, right? Is that
we're not waiting,
and we're also not waiting for someone else to grant these things
for
us,
right?
Because the truth is that, you know, the joy, the happiness, the peace, the comfort are kind of all things that you have to just acknowledge that you have.
Learn to access them right now.
Yeah. You have to learn to find it in what you have now. It's just like with the baby pool. You could look at that and say, I don't have my beautiful pool. Like, this is what I don't have. Or you can look at it and say, I got a fucking baby pool. Like, hell yeah. Let's do this. Like this brings me joy. You decide.
I'm lucky to have a yard.
Right.
And a hose that allows me to have a baby
pool. As somebody who doesn't have a hose at my apartment,
right?
Like, it's true though, but you decide that this thing that you do have right now brings you joy.
It's enough.
And
it's enough.
And it's a decision that you get to make for yourself. And I think that that's a big thing with diet culture, is that we've been taught that we need to be given joy. Other people have to give that to us. They have to tell us that we are acceptable.
Or we have to buy it, right?
Or we have to buy it.
The clothes or the house or the car or the vacation. It's like, it's the ultimate scarcity trap.
Exactly.
Oh, I'll be happy when I have this thing. It's the have, do, be model that Holly and I teach in Homecoming versus the be, do, have. I get to be the things I want in the here and now. It's such a dramatic shift. And it truly is so profound.
And
that's why people, and this brings us back to, like, if people say, like, oh, money can't buy you happiness, oh, blah, 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 blah. And it's because if we're placing all our happiness in these things, we're just stuck in scarcity, and then nothing's ever enough. And then there's always the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. And we're placing our happiness and joy in these externals instead of rooting ourselves in the deeper joy of just who we are, as we are, what we have, and finding gratitude in our current scenario, our current self, our current life.
It's actually one thing that really helped me with the gratitude when I was struggling. And if anybody listening is struggling with, like, painful issues, or your body you feel like is just not, like, functioning like you'd want it to function to, like, do the things you want to do, I ended up, instead of sitting in that place of scarcity where I was like, oh, I can't do this, I can't do this, I feel so bad, like going down that rabbit hole, I would shift subtly to, what am I grateful for? What can I do? What can I appreciate? And some thoughts that came up when I started doing that was, you know what? My body is communicating with me all the time. And sometimes she communicates messages that are a little hard for me to hear. Like, I don't want to hear them. Like, I don't want to hear that there might be endo here, but the way she's communicating that is by blowing up my stomach. So I will listen and I will say, hey, like, you should get this checked out. So the more I could see those symptoms, like powerful cries for healing, and just my body communicating with me, it was a lot easier to to interpret the messages and to not go down this rabbit hole of feeling awful in my body. So I guess my tip to those would be just shift to gratitude. And like, the more you start shifting to gratitude, the more your focus gets away from like how you feel uncomfortable in your body, and you start appreciating the things that you are able to do in your body and the things that do feel good. And then you're actually going to start creating more of that good feeling just by doing that.
Yes.
So good. Yes.
Morgan.
I love it.
Oh my goodness.
I know.
It's been an hour already. I know.
It's time to wrap. It's time to wrap.
Holy guacamole.
So take us home with the last question, Steph.
All right. So Morgan, we also like to end with the same question for all of our guests. So if you could go back in time to younger Morgan at any point, it can be when you were very young or even 2019 Morgan, and let her know something, what is one thing that you wish that she knew?
I would tell her that you can trust yourself and trust your intuition, and that there really is no right way to live your life. It's just living it the way that you want to live it and listening to whatever feels best to you. So really like trusting your own authority.
Hell yes. Hell yes. Oh my goodness, Morgan.
So tell us, Morgan, where can people find you, learn more about you? How can they work with you? All that good stuff.
Over on Instagram, I have everything you'll need to know. It's where I hang out, spend most of my time. So Morgan Michelle Coaching. Michelle just has one L. It always trips people up. My mom wanted to be unique and have just the one L.
I love
there you
it.
Go.
I love it. We'll have that in our show notes. So it's very easy for people to find you. Morgan,
thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It was so fun. Love talking with you guys.
Steph and I have become the same person.
We are really melding into one over here.
We really are.
Oh my goodness. Well, thank you all for joining us for another week of the Babesmint. Just a reminder, if you love the show, don't forget to subscribe and
give us a review.
Give us a review on Apple Podcasts. That is the best
way. It helps us so much.
It is the best way for people to hear about the pod.
The more good reviews we have, the more people hear about the pod.
And we also really love reading them. We read every single one of your reviews. So
I know. It's the best.
It's the freaking best. So go review. Go tell us that you love us, because I like to hear it. And
thanks. We love to hear it.
Thanks. We love you. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for tuning into another episode of The Babesmint.
We hope you're feeling a little more at home in your body and inspired as hell.
If you are ready to change your relationship with your body and yourself, we're here for you.
Snag a goddess session with Steph.
Or check out Jules' free masterclass to free yourself from diet culture for good.
The links are on our website to learn more and sign up.
And of course, if you loved this episode, we'd so appreciate it if you spread the love a little bit.
Share the app.
Rate the show.
Leave a review.
Subscribe.
You know what to do. Until next time.
Thanks. We love you. Bye.